Today is July 20th, 2017, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Philip Alexio. Coming up on the program, U.S. Senator John McCain has been diagnosed with brain cancer, but if anyone can beat it, he can. We talk with State Department correspondent Cindy Sain about the man known as the Maverick.
He thinks about, you know, losing to President Obama every day, and he said it with a kind of a smile on his face, but he was honest enough to say it.
According to the New York Times, President Donald Trump says the Russian investigation would cross what he calls a red line. Also ahead, French military spending cuts prompting a top general's resignation, and our social media wrap with Andrew Palcheski. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. Senator John McCain's been diagnosed with brain cancer, and that news coming from doctors at the Mayo Clinic Hospital in Phoenix. A malignant tumor was discovered after the 80-year-old Republican senator from Arizona underwent a surgical procedure last week to remove a 5-centimeter blood clot behind his left eye. A tissue pathology revealed a primary brain tumor known as glioblastoma, which was associated with the blood clot. We had a chance to talk with correspondent Cindy Sain about Senator John McCain because she had a chance to interview him last May, and this is what she had to say.
I got to talk to him when I was covering the White House and was about to travel with President Obama to Vietnam and to Hiroshima. And, of course, Senator McCain was a prisoner of war in Vietnam for 5.5 years. He was shot down. He was a young pilot, shot down over a lake there near Hanoi, and then spent 5.5 years and suffered terrible neglect and torture, and was offered to be able to leave early, but said he was not leaving without his fellow prisoners. So I was talking to him about the president going to Vietnam, and I did not realize how many times John McCain had gone back to Vietnam, how he was working with exchanges for young people, having young Vietnamese students come to the United States, and he talked about the power of reconciliation. And he was all for the visit, and he was all for how a former enemy can turn into a friend.
He has forgiven the past. And he's always been somebody who has moved forward, and he's really known as a fighter in everything that he does, and he sort of has developed this reputation after being in the Senate for a long time as a maverick also, because he didn't always vote along party lines. So what else can you say about him? Because he really is an American hero.
He is, and he's one of very few, really a singular figure in American politics who is considered a hero by both Republicans and Democrats. Obviously, his time as a prisoner of war, his service as a Vietnam vet, but also he's an elder statesman in the Senate, and he is now chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee. He's a real hawk on foreign policy. He's tough on Russia, but he's also reached across the aisle many times to work with Democrats, very common sense, pragmatic approaches to things like campaign finance reform, comprehensive immigration reform, and he voted to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So Senator McCain, you know, he can be tough, he can be irascible, but he is also a common sense senator who's worked very hard for the good of the country, and he's been a real champion for the U.S. military and for defense spending over the years.
Now, of course, he has run for president twice, the first time in 2000 against President Bush, and then the second time in 2008 against Barack Obama, and he lost both times. So does that stick in him a little bit because somebody has accomplished as much as he has, and, boy, there was that last little, you know, that last jump there to become president of the United States that was not able to win either time?
Yes, I think it did, and he was honest enough and to admit that one time, saying he thinks about, you know, losing to President Obama every day. And he said it with a kind of a smile on his face, but he was honest enough to say it. And, you know, it did hurt, and he did really want that. And I think he really believed, because of his experience, that he would have been an excellent commander-in-chief. But he was by no means embittered by it. And President Obama was one of the first to tweet out and saying that he is one of the toughest people he knows, an American hero, and that saying, John, give cancer hell. McCain himself just tweeted thanking people all over the country and all over the world for an amazing outpouring of support. And he said, I'll be back, stand by. So that's what I've seen with him on the Hill. He always loved to talk to reporters, and he just, you know, walked quickly along the corridors. He was always a bundle of energy and always very optimistic. And I think that will serve him well right now.
It certainly should, State Department correspondent Cindy Sain. It is 10 minutes past the hour, and joining us now is Andrew Palcheski to tap into the social media line of the day. And what do you have?
Well, as Cindy was talking about, lots of reaction after this news about Senator John McCain, and a lot of U.S. political heavyweights sharing their support on social media. Cindy talked about former President Barack Obama. We also have President Trump tweeting out his thoughts and prayers to Senator McCain, Cindy, his wife, and their entire family. Hillary Clinton saying that John McCain is as tough as they come and that she's thinking of John and his family. Former Secretary of State John Kerry, who served for a number of years in the Senate with John McCain, said that he loves John McCain. He's unbeatable and unbreakable, calling him Teddy Roosevelt's man in the arena, even when we were on opposite sides. And some very poignant tweets from former Vice President Joe Biden. He said that he and John McCain have been friends for 40 years. He's gotten through so much difficulty with so much grace. He's strong and he'll beat this. And then he added another tweet where he said, "Incredible progress in cancer research and treatment in just the last year offers new promise and new hope. You can win this fight, John." Now, that tweet's particularly poignant because Biden's son, Beau Biden, died of the same kind of brain tumor about 2 years ago. And Joe Biden has made cancer research one of his big causes that he's advocated for. So certainly hits very close to home for him. And then, of course, as Cindy said, John McCain tweeting out his thanks for all of the well wishes that are coming his way and says, "Unfortunately for my sparring partners in Congress, I'll be back soon." So looking forward to hopefully getting back to the Senate very soon.
Well, I think he will. I think he's going to hang tough, and everybody's pushing for him. And if anybody can beat it, he sure can.
And that is the sentiment we're seeing across social media from Republicans, Democrats, all across the political spectrum. Everyone's saying cancer picked the wrong guy to pick on, that he's a fighter. He's fought before for his country, and now he's going to fight this as well.
All right. Is that it for you? We got any more?
We've got a big anniversary today we got to get to.
Because let's get to that. We don't want to miss the anniversary.
We don't want to miss the big anniversary because it won't be an anniversary tomorrow. It's only today.
Right.
July 20th, 1969, Neil Armstrong becomes the first person to walk on the moon 48 years ago today. So people celebrating that on social media with hashtag Apollo 11 and hashtag Moon Day. Buzz Aldrin tweeting out, "48 years ago today, three lucky guys were on a journey to be the first humans to land on the moon." And lucky they were, and indeed they did land on the moon. So lots of celebration of that the years later. Neil Armstrong, unfortunately, has passed away about 5 years ago. But Buzz Aldrin, Michael Collins, the two other men on the mission, still there. And Buzz is tweeting quite a lot for a guy who's up there in years. So a lot of people following along with Buzz there.
Yeah, and you know, I hope sometime, someday soon, we can go back there.
Lots of people saying that. They said, you know, people would love to go back to the moon, and they said it's a testament, even 48 years later, still a testament to the things we can accomplish if we dream big.
Certainly is. Andrew Palcheski, everybody. It is now 13 minutes past the hour. You're listening to International Edition. The U.S. announces the seizure of a darknet marketplace, Alphabay. The Saudi prince arrested following the release of abuse videos. More than three dozen people are arrested in a Filipino casino kidnapping case. And India's foreign minister says China and India should withdraw troops from the disputed Himalayan plateau. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Well, in an interview with the New York Times, U.S. President Donald Trump said that if a special prosecutor investigating Russia's influence in last year's presidential election and possible collusion with his campaign expands the probe to look at Trump's family finances unrelated to Russia, that would cross the red line of what is acceptable, according to the president. The president also talking about his decision to hire Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Now, if you recall, Sessions recused himself from the Russia investigation. But the president, according to the New York Times report, said that if Sessions had indicated the intention to recuse himself before being nominated, then Trump would have, quote, picked someone else. Well, joining us now is national correspondent Jim Malone to talk about this. And let's tackle, Jim, the president's comments about the Russian investigation and the president saying there could be, quote, a red line. What does that mean?
Well, it seems as though that the expansion of the investigation now to include the involvement of Trump's son, Donald Jr., in a campaign meeting that included a Russian lawyer, apparently with some dirt to offer on Hillary Clinton, has got the president a little bit concerned. And he seems to be laying out that he thinks Mueller should focus on the Russia probe specifically. But here's the question here. It gets a bit of a gray area, Phil. I mean, if they're looking at a lot of things, it may start to involve whatever economic or financial ties there are with Russia, just as a backdrop. So I think there's been a lot of concern in recent months as to what might prompt the president to want to fire Robert Mueller. He has that right, but there has to be sort of a justification for it under Justice Department rules. In any event, this leaves this whole Russia thing in a bit of a murky quandary right now, but it shows he continues to seethe about the Russia probe. He's very much distracted by it and upset with Jeff Sessions, who, by the way, said today, well, he's planning to continue in his job no matter that article.
Well, now, what prompted that comment by the president? Because Jeff Sessions has been in his corner from the very beginning.
He has, really.
A stalwart supporter of the president. So 6 months down the road to hear him say something like this about Jeff Sessions just seems a little bizarre in that respect.
Sessions was one of the most conservative members of the Senate, and he was the first one to leap onto the Trump campaign before any of the rest of them did. He set aside any concerns he had and embraced Trump. They would campaign together. And again, it goes back to this idea that Trump has been bothered from the beginning by the Russia probe. He didn't really appreciate the fact that Sessions early on decided to recuse himself shortly after he became attorney general. And the sense you get from reading this interview is that Trump believes the attorney general should kind of be serving the president in a way and maybe almost acting as a protector. And, you know, traditionally in our country, the attorney general is supposed to be the top law enforcement person in the land and is supposed to try to remove him or herself from politics as much as possible.
Now, is the attorney general, I'm not sure about this, but is the attorney general not also the president's, there's no other connection to that?
No, the president's lawyer is the White House counsel, if that's what you're
heading
for.
I know, but I thought I had heard something where the attorney general was some other, but obviously.
Well, historically, we've had John Kennedy appointing his brother as attorney general.
Okay.
They tend to want someone close to them. Mm. And that informally they think would protect them. And I think maybe that's what Trump has in mind. But I think some Republicans, even on Capitol Hill, are a little concerned by these comments regarding Jeff Sessions.
Now, the one last thing I would ask you, when the president is pushing these words, crossing a red line, getting back to Mueller, we don't know what that means, obviously, but that's a pretty powerful thing to say, and you indicated that obviously
in the interview they pressed him, mm-hmm. would you fire him? And he did come back and say, I'm not considering that, or I don't have any plans to do that. But he also said he thinks it would cross a line if the investigation started to move away from specifically dealing with Russia.
Very interesting. It's something every day.
It is.
All right. National correspondent Jim Malone, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, listen, in spite of all these unusual situations surrounding the presidency and the investigations that are ongoing, the president has been busy doing other things. He's 6 months into his presidency, and President Trump has a mixed record on his pledges to reverse much of his predecessor's foreign policy legacy. Now, he's withdrawn from the Paris Climate Accord, he's dropped the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Pact and vocally supported better relations with Russia, but as VOA White House correspondent Peter Heinlein reports, many other aspects of Barack Obama's policies, such as the Iran nuclear deal, they remain in place.
When he speaks in public, there's no mistaking Donald Trump for Barack Obama. In a speech to cheering Poles in Warsaw, Trump distanced himself from Obama's multilateral diplomacy, warning that Western values are threatened by terrorism from those who do not share those values and complacency from those who do.
Do we have the desire and the courage to preserve our civilization in the face of those who would subvert and destroy it?
But on a number of key issues, his actions have not lived up to his campaign rhetoric. On Iran,
that Iran deal is the dumbest deal I think I've ever seen. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that.
But as president, Trump has twice signed a certification keeping the Iran nuclear deal in place. And on NATO, he reversed his campaign position that the alliance was obsolete.
I said it was obsolete. It's no longer obsolete.
He has reversed three major Obama initiatives, cracking down on immigration and pulling the United States from two multilateral agreements, the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal and the Paris Climate Accord.
The bottom line is that the Paris Accord is very unfair at the highest level to the United States.
But after being rebuked and isolated by America's G20 partners, he suggested on a visit to Paris last week that he might change his mind.
Something could happen with respect to the Paris Accord. We'll see what happens.
Foreign policy analysts say Trump's mixed messages are creating international confusion.
There are deep-seated questions about American values and about where this administration is going to head. If it heads in a very nationalist and a very populist direction, 4 years from now, we could see a very serious erosion in the trust, the confidence, the stickiness, if you will, of the relationships and the institutions that have kept the international order in a stable fashion.
At least for the moment, however, a variety of factors are keeping Trump's policies fairly close to Obama's. On Iran, his team of seasoned policy advisors has weighed in. On his travel ban, the courts have limited the scope of his executive order. And on North Korea, the president simply realized that, like Obama, he has no good options. Peter Heinlein, VOA News, The White House.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA says it plans to abstain from sending any commands to its two operating Mars rovers and its three orbiters currently circling the Red Planet from July 22nd to August 1st. The space agency says the temporary hiatus is because communication capability between Earth and Mars will be greatly reduced due to movements of the planets that will place the Sun directly between Earth and the Red Planet. According to NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, the break in communications is being made out of caution. Because of the expected degradation of the Earth-Mars signal, the space agency is concerned that any commands it would send to its orbiters and rovers during this time could become garbled during the roughly 55 million kilometer trip and put the missions at possible risk. However, NASA will continue to receive data from Mars during this time, and any information that would be disrupted will be retransmitted later. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
It just seems like everything is connected to Russia these days. The U.S. Treasury Department has fined ExxonMobil Corporation $2 million for violating Russia sanctions related to Ukraine, while Secretary of State Rex Tillerson was CEO of the global oil and gas conglomerate. The State Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control imposed the civil penalty after concluding that ExxonMobil did not voluntarily disclose the violations, which constitute an egregious case, according to the statement. Now, Treasury said that executives of ExxonMobil's U.S. subsidiaries signed a legal document with Igor Seshin, the president of Rosneft, a Russian state-owned oil giant that describes itself as the world's largest publicly traded petroleum company. Seshin is on Treasury's list of blocked persons. Now, the documents, which Treasury said ExxonMobil failed to voluntarily self-disclose, were related to oil and gas projects in Russia. The agency said ExxonMobil showed reckless disregard for the sanctions by dealing with Seshin, a person that they knew was on the U.S. blacklist. The Treasury Department said ExxonMobil caused significant harm to the sanctions program.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. For detailed information about your favorite sports, visit our website, voaafrica.com. And if you want to chat with me and sports fans in Africa and all over the world, visit my Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. There, the sports talk never stops. So come on, join the action with the Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Well, the head of the French Armed Forces has resigned after a clash with President Emmanuel Macron over budget cuts. With more on that, we go to Henry Ridgewell.
Following his resignation, General Pierre de Villiers said in a statement that proposed budget cuts this year meant he was unable to guarantee the protection of France. It's the first big test of authority for President Macron.
But it also shows, and I'm sure that's his intention, that he's serious about making cuts, about bringing the French economy up to speed with the European targets.
Macron wants close to $1 billion shaved from the 2017 defense budget to get this year's national deficit under control. But he's promised a rise in military spending for 2018 and beyond.
The President of the Republic reaffirmed his commitment to a progressive increase in the armed forces budget to 2% of GDP by 2025.
The Trump administration is pressuring NATO allies to meet that 2% target, but France's military is already committed on several fronts. Around 7,500 troops are deployed on the streets of French cities following recent terror attacks. French forces are engaged in military strikes against Islamic State jihadists in Syria and Iraq. And they are also taking the lead in counter-terror operations in North Africa. A 4,000-strong French force is deployed across the Sahel region.
France's military activism of the recent decades, has led to the military being overstretched, to capabilities being underfunded, so there is a need for investment there.
Macron's pick for the new military chief, General François Lecointre, led the EU mission in Mali. Mali was the president's first state visit after taking office.
We can't.
And you've been listening to International Edition. I'm Philip Alexiou in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Hafiz Abdul Rahman Maki is a fugitive who was wanted for his role in helping lead the radical Lashkar-e-Taiba terrorist group dedicated to imposing strict Islamic rule over parts of India and Pakistan. The organization is believed to have organized and conducted the November 2008 attack on Mumbai, India, that left 166 people dead, including six American citizens. For his actions, the U.S. Treasury Department listed Maki as a specially designated terrorist and has imposed sanctions on him. The United Nations declared his group an international terrorist organization soon after the Mumbai attack in December 2008. A Pakistani citizen, Maki was born in Bahawalpur, Pakistan, in about 1948. He is known to have used the alias Abdulrahman Maki. The U.S. Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $2 million for information leading to Maki's location. The U.S. promises that all credible reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. If appropriate, the U.S. is prepared to protect informants by relocating them and their families. If you have information on this man, contact the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate and the tip line at www.rewardsforjustice.net.